My name is David Greenberg, and I'd like to welcome everyone to our teleseminar today entitled Humorpalooza, How to Discover, Develop, and Deliver Rock Solid Humor. My expert guest is my friend, speaker, author, and humorist, Ron Culberson. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate your inviting me to be here.
I am thrilled that you're here. You're one of the funniest people I know, and you're going to be teaching our listeners some wonderful techniques for incorporating humor, whether they are funny or whether they are not funny. So we're going to learn a lot from Ron. Let me tell our listeners a little bit more about your background so they know who indeed they are learning from. As a speaker, humorist, columnist, and author of three books, one entitled, Is Your Glass Laugh Full? The other, My Kneecap Seems Too Loose. And his newest book, Do It Well and Make It Fun. Ron Culberson's mission is to help staff and managers achieve a new level of success by understanding the power of do it well and make it fun. Ron helps ordinary people become extraordinary by helping them focus on excellence while making their work experience more enjoyable. Next year, Ron will be the president of the National Speakers Association, of which I am a very proud member. So Ron has the background, he has the humor, he gives amazingly funny and insightful speeches, and he's going to teach us how to do the same. Ready to get started, Ron?
I'm ready.
All right. I've got a slew of questions. So the first question, how did you personally get into humor? What started this all for you, please?
Well, you know, I was the guy in high school that wanted to be class clown, and I didn't get it. I actually got teacher's pet, which is just very disappointing for anybody that wants to be class clown. That was just the brown nose the role. But basically, I had always been funny. I was one of these guys that just had this natural ability to be funny, and used it to my advantage in a lot of different settings, including in school. In high school, I was actually given the opportunity by the principal of school. I don't even know how this – I look back now and I don't know what he was thinking. But clubs would come up to me and ask me to write a funny announcement for an event they had coming up. For instance, maybe a club was having a bake sale or a dance, sponsoring a dance, and they would say, would you write the announcement to be made over the intercom? And the principal not only let me do that, he let me make the announcement. So my last year in high school, I kind of became a little bit of a celebrity because I was doing these funny announcements that I wrote myself over the intercom. And then I got into college. I was at the University of Virginia where we didn't have a real band. We had a joke band. Our band went out and performed 8 to 10 funny, often political jokes, played accompanying music, and formed some picture on the field that went with the joke. And I was on the committee that wrote the jokes, and the last year I was there, I was responsible for the halftime show. I was in charge of making that happen, so I oversaw not only the joke writing, but the designs, the formations, and the music and all that. So I'd had my hand in this a little bit before I graduated high school, but then I never, ever considered that you could do this for a living in any capacity. I didn't see myself as a stand-up comic, and got to college, got a psychology degree, went on to graduate school in social work. But I did my graduate thesis in social work on humor and depression.
Wow.
And I just have boxes and boxes of research studies in my basement on the therapeutic benefits of humor. So right out of the gate, out of grad school, I was working in a psychiatric hospital, and I did a short presentation on the benefits of humor, why humor works, and I did it for the staff that worked there. And they said, hey, this is really good. You ought to do it for other hospitals. So I went across town. I did the same presentation for another hospital. To make a long story short, once I got out of grad school and into the real world, I started working in hospice care and put in a proposal to speak at the National Hospice Organization at one of their conferences on the therapeutic benefits of humor. And the proposal was rejected. So I put it in again the next year, and it was accepted. And then for the next 15 or 20 years, I spoke off and on at that convention and, was doing programs. I did a lot of other topics, but my sweet spot or my bread and butter was really about humor and the benefits of humor. And so about 15 years ago, I left that job and started my own business, started speaking, and a lot of what I do is focused on the power of humor. Now, I've tweaked my focus a little bit over the years, And now I would say the focus is slightly adjusted, but the programs are still very funny. They're intended to be funny and entertaining. And so that's kind of how I got into the process from a start of making funny announcements on the intercom in high school.
Well, that's excellent that somebody gave you that break, if you will, very early on. And, you know, coincidentally, our backgrounds are somewhat similar, where clubs were coming up to you in school, kids were coming up to me with clubs. So a little different. I started developing humor as a way not to get beaten up.
Yeah, well, I did the same. I mean, I was never in a fight because I was always able to talk my way out of it using something funny.
Right, if you were the funny guy, they valued that for some strange reason.
Right.
All right, a whole other topic, I'm certain. So tell us, what is your philosophy about the role of humor in presentations? We can go in so many different directions, but let's just focus on presentations, at least for now. What's your philosophy on that role?
Well, I think we live in a different world today where good content just doesn't do it anymore because content is available everywhere. I mean, you can go on the internet and find all the content you want. You don't need to hear it from someone else. So what that means to me is that we're in a time where if someone is going to present information to someone else, they have to do it differently in order to engage them in the way that they want to. Now, I have a philosophy that every presentation is about, the goal is influencing someone in some way. And so if that is our goal, we really need to be memorable and we need to engage the audience. And I put storytelling and humor right up there at the top as the two things that are just the most powerful way to entertain and engage the audience. And I do both, and most of my stories are funny. I mean, just because I'm a humorist, I almost always seek the goal of making stories funny. But I think what happens then is that the audience keeps with you. And if you have some content that you want to get across, it gets across differently cognitively when it's coupled with humor or stories for that matter. But the humor makes it stick in the brain differently, and that's been proven in research studies time and time again. So I think it's a necessary tool.
You do think it's a necessary tool?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what I love, Ron, about your background, not only are you indeed funny, you're a wonderful humorist. I've heard you present many times. So you walk your talk. You also have the background of the research. So in some ways, maybe we don't always need the research. If people are laughing, we know it's generally a good thing. But you do have the research that really backs up the importance of this topic. So your credibility is so very high on this topic.
Well, and just to say something about that, the studies that were done that I think is most relevant to presentations is that they researched teachers in middle school and high school and elementary school, colleges, and what they found was that when they used humor to present material, the students not only remembered the information longer so that it stayed in their brain longer, but when they were in the situation of taking tests, they were able to recall the information easier. So on two levels, it made the information more accessible to the students. So if you put that inside of a presentation, I mean, you can ask people, think about, your favorite five presentations that you've seen in the last couple of years. Chances are there's going to be a strong element of humor in those presentations or something that makes it stand out, that it's not just good information.
Yeah, it's not just a data dump of content. Yeah.
Right.
What do you say to the person who's a presenter, perhaps a corporate presenter, who says, I just want to get to the facts. That's what I want to hear when I'm listening to a presentation, and it's what I deliver. Can you argue that point? Because I think you can. I know it's important, but I want to hear your best argument for that person, please.
Well, there's no question, and you and I both probably have had these experiences. There are certain groups of professionals who tend to be more about just give me the facts.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to waste their time on anything but the facts, and we've all run into that. But I would say they are in the minority, and if you know that about a group going in, you can adjust your comments accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the vast majority of people will tell you, yeah, I want the facts, I want the information, but don't make me sit there and listen to an hour of just boring content. That if I'm going to be there, I want it to be an experience, an engaging kind of fun experience. I'll give you an example. I have spoken for a couple of physician groups, and they tend to be that way. They tend to want just the content. They want the, and I think it probably has something to do with their training and upbringing. If that's the way they learned, that's the way they were taught in med school. It's just this constant sort of a barrage of material. But I still think you put those people in a room and give them the information in an entertaining way, they appreciate it. They may not realize the value of doing it that way until they experience it. But you know, they might tell you up front, this is the, you know, I just want it this way. But I still think that it works, and it's much more effective if we can. It's kind of like, you know, if you leave the salt off a vegetable, it's very bland. But if you add a salt, it brings out all kinds of other flavors. And humor can be that salt.
Yes, and since you have that background of working with the hospitals, you know that the great benefits of putting lots of salt on your food.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll edit that out.
That gets into the area of overdoing it with humor.
Well, and actually that's really a good point, isn't it? So perhaps jokingly I brought that point up, but that really is a good point because you can overdo it. How about talking about that for a moment?
Yeah, and that is really true. And I have colleagues that will ask their clients how much entertainment do you want versus content to give them a sense of where the audience is coming from and how much balance their needs. And I think that's a very wise thing to get a sense of the group. I tend to have my own professional judgment when it comes to that. So I may not stick exactly to the percentage that the client tells me because I know that in that situation one may work a little better than the other. But that's just based on experience. But, yeah, I think sometimes you can overdo it. And a perfect example, I attended a training seminar, you know, one of the training seminar companies. When I was in another job, I wanted to learn a little bit about more creative thinking, so I went to a full-day program on that. And the person
what
that was teaching
it,
it was not great. And what happened was is that the content was good, but the person was interjecting their own humor, stories, jokes, all this kind of stuff that was not relevant to the content.
Right.
And so it was just this constant, a little bit of information and then a string of jokes that had nothing to do with what the content was. And by noon, it was a full-day program, by noon I was ready to bail because I felt like I wasn't getting what I was there for. Now, had the humor been more relevant and had it been a little less of it, I think it would have been just the right balance to give me what I needed.
Right. But so the pendulum really can swing too far, and you have to walk that fine line of what's the appropriate amount of humor based on the topic, the audience, and your goals.
Right.
Yeah. And you mentioned the medical community perhaps being more wanting the facts. I remember the first time I spoke to the American Medical Association, brilliant audience, of course, and I was so thrown because I would say something that I thought was very funny, and instead of laughing, they would turn to one another and they would say, "That's funny." They didn't laugh. And they come up to me, at the person who looked like the most stone-faced, and this still happens today, is almost always the one who comes up to me at the end of the presentation and says, "That was the funniest thing I ever heard."
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, and this is a stereotype, I know, and I'm generalizing, but that tends to be more the way with all male audiences versus all female audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Men can sit there and not laugh out loud. They might smile, they might snicker, but they're not as verbose or as audible as women are. And you can get the sense that they're not enjoying it or they're not appreciating it. But then you look at the evaluation forms or you ask people afterwards, and the comments are exactly the same. They just don't show it the same way.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. I know you and I, as professional speakers, we love when we know there's going to be a high percentage of female in the audience because they're better laughers. They just are. There's probably research on that as well. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Ron, how about serious topics? For example, you're a business person and you have to present. Maybe it's not such great news. Is that the time to put humor in as well?
You know, that is the most common question I get when I'm working with people who speak, whether it be speakers or executives or people who speak, do presentations, and they want to add humor to it. That's the most common question I have. Well, I have a serious topic. This is not really appropriate. I answer that the same way I used to answer it when people would ask me, is humor appropriate in every situation? there is not a situation that I can imagine or that I have experienced where humor has not worked. But that doesn't mean that it's always appropriate to introduce it. And a perfect case example is when I worked in hospice. I didn't walk into the room of a terminally ill patient and start slinging jokes. That was not appropriate. That would not be appropriate for me to introduce it at that moment. However, I can show you example after example after example of people who were terminally ill that said things funny, that experienced funny things in the midst of their illness or the midst of the care, or experienced funny things the staff did that we can then enjoy and benefit from and share with one another to take advantage of that humor. So I think the same thing is true when it comes to serious topics. The one that I seem to get the most often is that people will say things like, well, I talk about sexual harassment or I talk about workplace violence. How do you make that funny? And I said, you don't.
Right.
You don't
right.
make that funny. You make the teaching of the concepts of that funny. And that's a very fine line, but an important distinction. When I used to do education programs in the community for hospice, I would talk about the dying process or the grieving process, very heavy topics, and the vast majority of the people that were there for a reason, so they were probably experiencing some aspect of what we were talking about. So I used funny examples of what people experienced in those situations rather than making light of going through them. And there was an old story that Burt Reynolds about a movie where Burt Reynolds was called The End, where he wanted to kill himself, but he really didn't have the guts to do it, and he kept doing things that didn't succeed. And so in this one example, he was going to drown himself, so he went out in the ocean, swam out in the ocean, he was going to drown himself, but then he got out there and he panicked. So he started swimming back, and he says, you know, God, get me back to the shore. I'll give you 50% of my salary every week in church. And he got about halfway back, and he says, God, I'm almost there. Get me back. I'll give you 25% of my salary. And it just kept going down and down until he got back on shore, and then he blamed God for the predicament he was in. So I use that as an example to describe the process of denial when I was talking to people about, Kubler-Ross's stages of dying. And so I wasn't making fun of denial. I was using a funny illustration to show what denial looked like. And this is important because it accomplishes two things. One is that it allowed me to interject humor without offending people about making fun of the topic. But more importantly, whenever you have a serious topic, your audience cannot stay in that heavy state of seriousness for the entire time. We need to give them release. We need to give them a break from the heaviness. We need to give them a chance to relieve some of the potential anxiety that might be created by talking about a serious topic. And I think the humor is a perfect way to do that. It's almost like a pressure valve being released.
Yeah.
And then people can then refocus back on the serious stuff. So with serious topics, it helps us in a lot of ways, but I think it still is just as essential.
Such a key statement there that you made, that you're not making fun of, in this case, denial. You're poking fun at the topic, and allowing people to laugh, which opens up their minds to then discuss, perhaps in that case, a serious topic. But it disarms people, if you will, and opens their minds so that they can take in the more serious information.
Right. There was a great Woody Allen quote. He used to say, you know, I'm not afraid of death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And that was one of my favorite quotes to use in those programs, because immediately everybody identifies with that.
Mm-hmm.
And in a funny way, it gets to what I think was the core of the issue, is that we live in a society we don't want to admit that we're going to die. So because we don't admit that, we don't deal with it, and we don't prepare for it, and we don't experience it in its fullest, in its full benefit that we might be able to get from the process. So it was a funny way to get at what everybody's thinking.
What do you think of this? I hear a lot of clients who call me for presentation coaching say something like this. Well, I was told a long time ago to start my presentations and speeches with a joke. What do you think of that?
Well, I absolutely agree with the phrase, you should start every presentation off with some humor. Now, you can start presentations off in a variety of ways, as you well know. You can start off with a great statistic, a stunning piece of information, a quote, a statement, whatever. There are a lot of ways. Your ultimate goal, obviously, is to engage them immediately, to hook mm-hmm. the audience immediately, to get them to pay attention to the rest of what you have to say. I believe humor is the best way to do that. But that's me. I'm a humorist, and so that's my bias.
Right.
Now, this distinction I'll make between humor and a joke is that a bit of humor can be a funny story. It can be something that you saw, an observation. It can be a quote from somebody else that said something funny. I use the example that Johnny Carson one time said, "Life's not fair, because if life was fair, Elvis would be alive and all the impersonators would be dead." That's a funny quote. You know, I don't have to come up with that. I can share that, and it makes people laugh, but it's somebody else. I'm giving attribution. Somebody else said it. But the reason I like the idea of starting with humor is that it does hook people. I mean, they are excited. But then, you know, if you're starting that way, you better be using it throughout. Mm. You can't just start that way and then never use it again, or you basically let them down. You've kind of said, "I'm going to be funny," and then you're not. But the distinction between a joke and humor is that jokes have been heard, jokes have been used, some of them have been used too much. And with the Internet, jokes are very accessible. So there are many, many jokes that people have heard before, and we think they're the funniest thing in the world, and we get up there and everybody goes, "Oh, that's an old joke, I've heard it before."
Right.
Funny stories.
Go ahead.
I was just going to the distinction for me is that a funny personal story or a funny observation I made or a funny sign I saw is personal to me and not as likely to be something that people have heard or that they have shared, somebody else has shared in another presentation. So that's one of the distinctions I make between a joke and humor.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think one of the worst things for a presenter to see happening is halfway through the joke that you might be telling, you see half the audience turn to one another and say, "Oh, I know how this ends." They all tell the punchline.
Yeah.
Or you actually hear the punchline as the speaker from an audience member. So, yeah, what a wonderful technique. Just quotes, as you said, this one from Johnny Carson, what a wonderful quote, or bumper stickers or signs, or certainly stories. So what are some of the mistakes that you think presenters, maybe executives or managers might make when using humor? What are some of the mistakes that they really should try to avoid?
Well, there's probably a bunch of these, and it's such an interesting question because I haven't thought about it that specifically when it comes to mistakes. But I think probably the first and foremost is offensive humor.
Good, yeah.
We live in a society where people do not have barometers. I can't tell you how many people will come up to me after a presentation because they know that I enjoy humor and then will tell me an off-color joke.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my reaction is I've always wanted to go, "Really? You think that's appropriate to share with me?" And I think what it is that they know it's a funny joke, and yet they don't understand the boundaries of when you share something like that and when you don't. Now, let me just put a disclaimer out there. I'm a purist. There is not any humor that has ever really offended me, because mm-hmm. I really look at it from the purest perspective of humor. Is it funny? Is it not? If it is done on some off-color offensive topic, I'm okay with that personally, because if it's funny, it's funny. So a lot of the comedians, you know, when Richard Pryor came out and he just started doing a lot more, R-rated comedy, I didn't mind because it was clever and it didn't offend me personally. Now, mm-hmm. that's very different than what I would do in a presentation or what I would share with someone else. There's a lot of humor I've enjoyed in the privacy of my own home that I have not shared with another person because it would not have been appropriate. It might be offensive to them. They might not see the humor in it the way I do. So I think it's important for us to realize that there are different perceptions, and then when it comes to presentations, we need to always be on the conservative side and mm-hmm. and not deal. And I'll tell you, I'm dealing with this right now. I have a story in my presentation that is absolutely rip-roaring funny, but I get a pretty regular response from a few people that they were offended by it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, psychologically, in my mind, I'm using the example because it's an experience in life when we're vulnerable that I think oftentimes we need to see humor so that we don't get so caught up in the in the vulnerability. But this has happened enough that I have now taken it out of my presentation. And it kills me because it is hilarious.
Did you want to run that by our listeners today?
Sure. You want me to?
Your choice. Your career.
Let me give you the overview. Yeah, let me give you the overview because I think that...
Should I make a disclaimer first? I've not heard this. Those of you listening, I have nothing to do with this. If it's offensive, please contact Ron Culberson. You'll have his number at the end of the program.
And I think you'll understand when I share it with you what I'm talking about because I really am very conservative. I don't do off-color humor. All right, the experience was that I walked into a bathroom in the Minneapolis airport, and there was a man standing at the urinal sending a text message but using both hands. All right, I get to that point in the story, and most people are laughing a bit. You know, they're not rip-roaring laughing, but they're laughing a bit. And then my next comment is I say something to the effect of, you know, it may be wrong, but I was impressed. That gets a huge laugh. That's the part of the story, I think, where people go one way or the other. They find it offensive because there's a subtle innuendo there that may be implying something that's inappropriate. Right. I am going for a laugh line that my first thought was, I can't believe he can do that. You know, that kind of ambidextrous kind of is the thinking of it, but I think people go a whole different direction. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the story is that, you know, I don't stand near him because I don't want something to go wrong with his technology. Now, this is a funny story that I would bet you 80% of most audiences find funny. But I've gotten probably a half a dozen comments that say they are offended by it that has just reinforced to me that it needs to go. Now, let me back up and tell you psychologically what troubles me about that is that I am not an offensive speaker. I don't do things for shock value. I'm not being gross or rude on purpose. It was a simple observation that occurred when I was in a situation where many of us in an airport could be stressed because of a flight being delayed or lost luggage. And I'm using the situation to show people that if they look for the humor, it's there, but we often don't see it because we're so caught up in ourselves. And so I talk about how if you were just caught up in something going on, you might breeze right by that and never notice something that's really quite odd and quite funny. But again, so there is a purpose for it that is not intended to be offensive. That's not the goal of it. The second part of that, which I mentioned earlier, is that often we are most stressed out when we are most vulnerable. And when are we most vulnerable? When we're at the doctor, when we're in public, when we're, you know, in situations where we could easily be embarrassed. So I'm trying to, again, reinforce a point that it is in moments of vulnerability where sometimes the humor can be most helpful to allow us to sustain us, I guess, through it. But bottom line is, and this would be the lesson for me, that and you and I know that we are always learning and we're always improving and we're always trying to change things. The lesson here is that it doesn't matter what I think. And right. It doesn't matter how much I can justify the value of this piece of humor to my presentation. If people find it offensive, it needs to go. And I've always used the rule of thumb. If one person says that something bothered them, I'll write that off to just an unusual circumstance. If two or three people say that something bothers them, then that to me is a greater indication that there might be more out there that aren't saying anything. So a long-winded way to get back to your original question, which is what is the biggest mistake, is that I think we sometimes make the mistake of not understanding what might be offensive to other people. And anything that is sexist or racist or in any way an ist, whatever that might be,
right.
or putting other people down in some form or fashion is probably going to teeter on that line of being offensive.
Yeah, so a great point. And regarding your story, 16 people disconnected after they heard the word urinal. So I'm not sure what that means exactly, but I'll let you be the judge. All right, moving on. All right.
There's that 3-hour delay. The value of that 3-hour delay comes
we'll
in
handy
again.
We'll edit that out later on. Yeah. So, but that is an important point about certainly there's an old expression, if in doubt, leave it out, and it's probably a good philosophy, especially for business presentations, which definitely is our focus. And you
can
don't
I just
want
say one,
yeah,
can
please.
I say one more thing about that is that, and you probably know this as well, but I have many friends who are humorists or former comedians, and some of them believe that if they're not being edgy and kind of pushing the envelope, they're not doing their job. And and I think sometimes we put humor in that box that it has to be that way. It has to be offensive to some people or it's not really good humor, and that's just not the case. There's plenty of great non-offensive humor that can be used. And you look at Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno, who did their entire careers pretty much squeaky clean, and you can see that you can,
Ellen
you can rise to the top of your
another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think we're on the same page, and you certainly don't want to ever be thought of in a company, if you work for someone, as a risk.
Right.
If I send him or her out to give the presentation to the board of directors or the clients or whatever it might be as the audience, that the person who's considering sending you out thinks, maybe I shouldn't because he or she goes over the line sometimes. So, yeah, I think if in doubt, leave it out. Other situations or the MC of an event, maybe it's a whole other ball game. But for business presentations, it's a good philosophy. Yeah.
It's the loose cannon rule. That's what those folks are usually referred to as. They're a loose cannon.
Yeah, it'll hurt your career in no time. It'll hurt your career. So again, the stories are such a powerful way to incorporate humor. Let's talk about this for a few minutes, Ron. So many people come to me, I'm sure they come to you, and say, well, where do I find humor? Where do I find it? So, Ron, you're the guest. Where do I find humor?
Well, there's two answers to that question. The first is that it is just everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere. And this is an old piece of material that I'll admit up front that I stole from somebody else who I'm sure stole it from somebody else. So it's not one of these original
pieces.
Then
it's okay, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. But I was at a conference the other day, and they had one of those signs in the shower that says, before using shower, place shower curtain inside tub, you know, and they're just telling you not to leave it outside the tub so that it drips on the floor. But what it implies is you need to take it off the rail and put it in the tub, which is the comment that I made. I said, you know, I saw this sign, and you know, the hardest part about this whole thing was I couldn't get it unhooked from the rod. And, of course, everybody laughs at this, and I've heard that before. I'm sure some of the people in that audience heard it before. But it was in that hotel where everybody else was staying there, and they all saw it. Mm-hmm. So it was just a great way to reinforce something that everybody saw and then use that as an example to say, see, this was there right in front of you. Did you pay attention? So part of it is that there are funny things that happen to all of us, and we can use those as stories.
Let me interject for a second. So, and what you did there, forgetting the stolen part, I'm going to just let that slip. Okay, but what you did there is that you took a group that you were not necessarily part of, because you're the guest speaker, and they are perhaps united, or even if they're not united, you united yourself with the audience, because now you have this shared event of being in these hotel rooms with the shower, and you united the audience as well. They all are now laughing at a common experience, so it really starts to open the minds. I know you have studied the psychology of humor, so you can get into this a lot deeper than I can, but that's really what's happening. People are now sharing a common event, a common laugh, and you can take them just about anywhere now.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because one of the things that is one of the most powerful techniques that I believe happens is to identify that common experience through a little bit of humor. Mm-hmm. And those of us that are humorous, typically if we go to a conference and we're speaking at the end of the day, we'll sit through all the main sessions where everybody's there, because we'll observe what everybody else is observing and look for opportunities to comment on that. I attended a conference recently where the woman before me, now I was talking about being, you know, offensive. This woman was not offensive, but she was speaking to a primarily female audience, and she used a lot of female biology kinds of references. And it was a healthcare audience. That's typically okay in that environment, because the audience is used to dealing with kind of bodily function kind of things in their job. But I have to admit to you that it was one of those things where it felt like a little bit more than the average speaker would have done.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took note of that, and when I got up to speak, I'll give you two things, two references I made. I got up to speak, and I said, I noticed, you know, when I came here today, there were a couple of stories that I had decided not to tell because they were a little bit too personal. And immediately, the audience cracked up because they had just sat through this other person who was very personal. Right. And then I said, but I listened to so-and-so, and now the stories are back in. And then they laughed again, you know. And so it was taking advantage of what I witnessed, what I saw. And then the second part of that whole how do you find the humor is putting your own twist to it. One more example from the same conference. This was a healthcare conference in a small venue. And so they shut down the men's room because they had too many women. And they put the men's room on the other side of the conference center. And they announced that at the beginning of the day. They said the men's room is over here. Well, it wasn't like that much farther, but it was farther for the men to walk. So when I was introduced, I ran up on stage, and I just looked at the audience and said, I'm sorry, I'm a little winded. I almost missed my introduction because my cab from the men's room was late. And, of course, everybody just cracked up because they had – it was obvious that all the men were having to walk a significantly longer distance to go to the bathroom. So, again, observation. What happens – it's either funny in and of itself, or you take it and then make it funnier. So some stories may be kind of cute stories, and they're interesting, and they have a good point that you could use in a presentation. But then you can take it and make the telling of it even funnier by adding some, not necessarily embellishment where you're actually lying about what happened, but the process of the telling of the story becomes funnier.
Mm-hmm. We call it poetic license.
Right, right.
Right. The gist of the story is still true. It would hold up in court.
Right.
But every detail might not be exactly what happened. So where else do we find humor? Stories? Do we look at our lives? Do we look at other people's lives? What are other good sources for humor for the, let's say, the average business presenter? Where do they look?
Yeah. Well, I read a wonderful book by Jeannie Robertson called the Don't Let the Funny Stuff Get Away. And in that book, mm-hmm. she kind of categorizes it. She tells you to look at your life and look at the categories of things in your life that might be potential for humor. So let's take me for an example. I'm in a Rotary Club. So I could categorize one area of humor could be in my Rotary Club. Somebody does something funny or says something funny in a Rotary Club and it becomes a story. Which, by the way, because I go to regular Rotary meetings, I have made it a point that every single Rotary meeting I attend, I'm going to say something funny. Because it
right.
forces me to pay attention in a different way. It trains that part of my brain to be looking for the humor. But for us, it might be travel, airports, hotels, you know, looking for things in airports that are funny. I saw a woman walking down the concourse one time. She's reading a novel, and she just turns and goes right in the men's room. Now, that's funny. And you know, maybe there's a funny story that comes into that about not paying attention or not being focused enough or whatever. I don't have, like, anything else with that story other than when I share that with people, I'll do a funny walk, like she bolts out of the bathroom a second or two later and just has this petrified look on her face. If I mimic that walk, people laugh. So the story in of itself is not a hilarious story, but the way that it can be told can be made funny.
And Ron, let me interject again. So we're also talking about developing humor, so perhaps that story is all you can get out of it. But also, I want to encourage our listeners that if you do observe, and I hope you do observe things that might potentially be funny, jot them down. You can have a formal file. I just use manila folders, and I keep everything in there. But you do what works for you. Back of envelopes I write on all the time. And I would write down something like the story you just said about the lady walking into the restroom, the men's room. And it may develop over time. If you tell it a few times, would you agree that it may start to get better? So don't write it off so quickly, oh, there's nothing there. But just keep telling it a few times, and you might start to speak a few gems that again, the poetic license, where all of a sudden something that really wasn't that funny, now it really is funny.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example of that, because David Glickman, my business partner in my mm-hmm. humor writing business, and I, we talk about this all the time. We'll say something differently, or we'll see somebody say something that it just gets a hilarious response from the audience. And as humorists and people that do this for a living, we are continually amazed that we didn't think of that at first. In other words, it just surprises us when we do something slightly different that it can get such a big reaction. And I'll give you an example. There's a story I tell about using a get-out-of-jail-free card to get out of a speeding ticket. I read it in a book, and then I put one in my car, and I actually tried to use it. But the first time I tried to use it, my wife didn't want me to use it. So what I used tell the story, I used to say that she didn't want me to use it. That's all I said. But now I'm sitting in the car, and I play it up that we're sitting there. I've got my get-out-of-jail-free card. I can't wait to use this thing. And my wife looks at me and says, do not use that card. And then she's got this vein in her head that's, like, throbbing, and I can see it pulsing. All right, so changing that slight little difference in the way I tell it gets a huge laugh. And, you know, if you take that and take it out of the story, it does not seem that funny. But when I actually act it out and draw out the phrase, I mean, what she really said to me was, I wouldn't use that if I were you. I just made it a little more intense. And then when I talk about the vein throbbing in her head, people crack up. And so it's a story that I've told for years and years and years and just made a slight adjustment about 6 months ago, and it's totally changed the story. So, yeah, I think that's part of it, is that we constantly tweak it. We say things differently. We look different when we say it. And that's it. You know, and that reminds me, another really big part of a resource for stories is to watch what the people around us do, our kids, our spouses, our family members. I mean, my son is just forever doing things that generate material for me. And so we always write that stuff down. We did it for a long time when they were little kids just so we'd have a record of it, but I do it now because it's material. And
can you give us an example, Ron, of either something from your son or anywhere where you could take something that's humorous and now for a business presentation that our listeners might be giving, how do you link that to a business topic? You can make up the topic if you want, but that's really key here, where sometimes humor is wonderful just for humor's sake, just to get people to laugh. And then sometimes it's more important, or at least equally important, to now use that humor as a springboard to link it to something relevant to the topic. Like you said, you went to that day-long conference and you wanted to leave because it really was just interjection of jokes and such that weren't helping you to learn anything. So can you show us an example or deliver an example some way where you – go ahead.
And I want to just say that you helped me with this too, just in the way that I structure my humor, but – one of the things I think is important is that I don't believe that any humor should be used ever if it's not relevant to the point, period. Because there's just no need to throw it in as a distraction to take you off center. But what I also believe is that I can almost turn any story into a point. And I think it's just by looking at all the elements in the story, whether metaphorically or real, and figuring out how that ties in. So I might be talking to a group about communication skills and how important it is to be clear in our communication. And one night at dinner, I was sitting with my son and my daughter and my wife, and I was trying to explain to my son the difference between the North and the South. My wife comes from Long Island, New York, about an hour from New York City, and I grew up in southwestern Virginia in a town of 280 people in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains. So there was clearly a difference in how we viewed the world when we were growing up. And so I wanted to explain to my son that there was a difference between the North and the South. And I said to him, I went to Patrick Henry High School. We were the Patrick Henry Rebels. There was a huge Confederate flag painted on the side of my stadium, the football stadium, and every time the football team scored a touchdown, the band played Dixie. And I told him, I said, that's not appropriate. That's not right. We shouldn't do that anymore. And he just had this painful look on his face, and he goes, Dad, you went to high school during the Civil War? And my audience is just crack up at this point. Obviously not here because everybody's on mute, but
they would be laughing hysterically.
I'm sure they are. We'll give them a minute to calm down.
They're texting but, you right now. Ha ha.
Yeah, but so I can then take that and go, no matter how clear I thought I was being, my son misinterpreted totally what I was saying.
Right.
And then I might use other examples from a work environment or whatever. But that's an example to me. Now, I'll tell you something else about that story. I did not change one word from how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to embellish it. I didn't have to tweak it. I didn't have to tell it differently. Well, I might have told it differently as time went on. But essentially, it happened exactly like that. And I will tell you, I start my presentations now with that story, and it gets a huge laugh.
Excellent.
Because people do not see it coming. They just do not see that his response coming.
And then as a presenter, a business presenter, you can then even reinforce the point about communication. So when we think we're being clear as day, we may be so wrong. And today what I want to work on with you or talk about is how can we make sure our communication is indeed crystal clear, and how can you learn about your audience or wherever you want to take the presentation. But the linkage is so crucial for the business presenter. So it's not just a funny story or a funny joke. It's linked to the message. So not only did you get them to laugh, which is a wonderful tool on its own, but you now took them to a place of seriousness, if you will, the topic, which they're now more ready to listen to and absorb.
Right, exactly. And making that link, you know, you hope that the link is obvious, but sometimes you have to make it. Sometimes you have to make that connection and connect the dots for people so that they get it. But absolutely, I think that's where you then roll in, and that's where the illustrations and the humor become the reinforcement. And, you know, when we know the way the brain works, and metaphors, which I consider humor and stories both to be not only entertaining and illustrative, but they're also metaphors. They sink in the brain in a different way. And I think they make a cognitive connection that reinforces the material.
Now, let me ask you a question. We've addressed it to a certain degree, and we may have addressed it fully, but let me put this out there anyway. I work with a lot of clients who say, well, I'm the CFO, the chief financial officer of the company,
right.
And really I'm just there to present numbers, and there's nothing funny, even if it's good news, there's just nothing funny about the numbers. How do I take this material, which isn't funny, and can I, should I make something funny? So the question basically, how do you make material that's just not funny? It's not necessarily about death and dying, but it's just not funny. It's scientific, for example, or number-based.
Yeah.
What do you suggest there, Ron?
Well, a couple things. One is that I'm a big fan of people who parody what they're doing. It's the, you know, in drama, I think they call it, you know, breaking down the fourth wall or whatever it is, where you actually go behind the scenes and see what's happening. And sometimes when you do that, it parodies what you're talking about. If you've ever seen a guy named Don McMillan, he's a stand-up comic who has integrated PowerPoint into his stand-up act. And it's hysterical,
right.
Because he's mocking PowerPoint.
Yeah.
So he's doing all the things he's telling you not to do. So you get a CFO or somebody that gets up there and they create a slide with so much data and numbers that you can't make heads or tail of it, and they're just giving you this gobbledygook of a presentation. That, to me, would be a parody on what they're doing. In other words, it's a way of sort of relieving people from needing to understand it all first round through. And he's kind of given you the option to say, yeah, this is a little overwhelming. A friend of mine was doing a workshop at a hospice conference, and it was on the research that had been done on the effectiveness of bereavement groups. Now, I can't tell you a more dry topic than that. And about every third or fourth slide in his PowerPoint presentation, he would have a picture of an animal just pop up. And it was usually a bird. It was usually a bird. And he would say, this was the yellow-bellied sapsucker or whatever that we saw on a recent trip to the Amazon. And this bird is, its native behaviors are this and such. And they live for this many years. And then he'd go to the next grief statistic slide.
Right.
Now, I am absolutely rolling in the floor. Now, the funny thing to me was nobody else got it. Nobody else figured it out. And there were people actually in the room saying to each other, do I need to write that down? Is that part of the, you know? But to me, that was hysterical. Now,
So
maybe it needs to be a little more obvious than that. But that was a perfect example to me of where you can go a slightly off direction, and you've got now a great interjection of some humor to balance out all that mundane stuff.
Very good. Now, coincidentally, I was coaching an executive just yesterday on his presentation where he had 10 goals that he had to deliver tomorrow to the company. And these goals each go into tremendous detail. And I said, by the time you get to number 5, I promise you they have forgotten the last 4. So you've got to break this up with something. And I said, stick the classic video in of the monkey cleaning the kitten, you know, just anything.
Exactly.
Right, just do something. You have to break this up because it's much like going to a movie where if it's a death scene, the person's dying, 10 minutes later, they're still dying, you're kind of bored with the movie. You can't take it anymore. Or if it's just all car chases, it gets boring
right.
as well. So variety, you know, spices thing up a bit. So and with the serious topics, like you said earlier, a story can go a long way just to add some spice to the darn presentation.
I don't remember. I don't know if you remember years ago when we were like probably high school, college age. There was a movie called Creepshow, which
mm-hmm.
was a series of short stories turned into like vignettes turned into a one movie where the different vignettes were shown. The theory behind that movie was they were trying to combine horror and comedy with the idea that when they were coupled together, they accentuated each.
Mm-hmm.
So the funny stuff made the scary stuff scarier and vice
yeah.
versa. I don't know if it actually worked, but I think that principle is exactly what we're talking about.
It's the dichotomy. And if you look at the movies that do really well, and really movies are a great place to look at for developing your presentation skills, because movies either do well or they don't. They either make many, many millions of dollars or they are bust. And they
right.
are analyzed very seriously as to, is that too many car chases? Is that too many of this? Too little of that? They are scrutinized because there's too much money at risk. And there may be too much money at risk for your presentations as well. If you look at movies, it's an old one, but like Terms of Endearment or any movie like that, that basically you've got something very funny. It almost always starts with funny, everybody's having a good time, and then boom, someone's got cancer. Okay,
right.
So, and that
right.
makes the funny is more intense and the serious is more intense. So same thing for your business presentations. You want to convey a serious message, get those numbers across and get in the stick, use humor beforehand or afterwards, and absolutely the dichotomy is going to work for you. I've got another question I want to sneak in here, Ron, and this just came up yesterday again in another coaching session with a female client. We were talking about her incorporating some self-deprecating humor, and I want to get your take on that for business presenters in general, and then specifically for women, is it different? So please tell us your thoughts about that.
That's really a complex question, because I think there's probably some literature out there that I'm not aware of, so I'm just going to give you my own personal expertise on this. Freud said that humor was the highest level coping mechanism that we could use. In other
mm-hmm.
words, humor takes a pretty confident and someone with a lot of self-esteem to be able to use effectively as a coping tool. So I think what that implies is that if we use self-deprecating humor, in my opinion, if it's done appropriately, now, and what I mean by that is that you're just not constantly putting yourself down, but
right.
that you might put yourself down as a way to then ease into something where you have to discuss a difficult topic or something. I believe that it shows a sense of confidence and competence if you are able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
An example of that is a friend of mine went with his daughter to visit the surgeon before her knee surgery to talk about the pre-op stuff that they needed to do. And my friend said to the surgeon, "How long will the surgery take?" And the surgeon said, "I don't know. I've never done it before." And then immediately my friend is like looking for a diploma or anything to imply that this guy is competent. And the surgeon then went on to say, "But don't worry about it. We keep a manual in the OR, and I'll just refer to it if I need to." So my friend said to me later, he said, "You know, I don't think he could have said anything more to me to make me rest assured that we were in good hands than
mm-hmm.
to be able to joke a little bit about his own competence."
Yeah.
And the same thing happened when my son went in for ACL surgery. The surgeon bounds into the room and says, "Hey, I just watched the video a second time. Let's go do this before I forget." And my son just cracked up. He's a teenager. He's 16 years old. He cracked up at that because he knew the surgeon was joking, but it put him at ease.
Yeah.
So I believe there's a certain amount of that, that the people that come up to us that are pompous and self-serving and self-important, they disconnect with us because we can't relate to that. But in the
right.
real world, we all have foibles and warts and, these things that don't go well. And so when we can show that to other people on some level in a self-deprecating way, we connect to them because they've experienced that as well. Now, the question about whether that works for women or not, I think the challenge there is that we know historically that women are sort of not on equal footing with men in the corporate world. So does that, in fact, undermine them so that they might be seen as lesser? I don't know the answer to that question. From a humor perspective, I still believe it implies a certain level of confidence and competence to be able to make fun of yourself. I just don't know whether there's a point where it might undermine women in a business setting where it might not affect men the same way. Because men have traditionally been those pompous kind of, I don't mean that, you know, in a bad way, but you know, the power, the people in power, the people, yeah, the people in power, the people that are, can sometimes be self-important, you know, because I'm in this position of authority, that kind of stuff. You know, so it helps in that way to bring them down a little bit, but I don't know if it does the same with women. That's a good question.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a fair answer, a very fair answer. And I'll just give you my two cents on this as well. And that is, when we use self-deprecating humor, I caution people to share a story that might be about something you did that was foolish, but that doesn't make you seem foolish. You might have done something in retrospect, looking back, that was a silly thing to do. But you are not a silly person or a foolish person. It may have been a stupid thing to do at one time. Perhaps there's something in your life that, you know, that was kind of stupid. I shouldn't have done that. And when you share that, you connect, you bond, because we've all done stupid things. And
right.
being confident enough to share that because you are so qualified for the job at hand, this is not detract at all. And it's, but the caution is, if you share something about something silly, stupid that you did, make sure it doesn't make you look stupid. It doesn't label you as stupid. There is a difference. You don't want to say things like, I am so stupid sometimes. That's
right.
not what you want to say, because then you get labeled as, boy, she or he is so stupid sometimes. I don't think they're the right person for the job. But you can tell a story about something you did that wasn't really the smartest at the time.
And let me just say that your comment is exactly why my own business is called Do It Well, Make It Fun, because I tell people that if you're going to use humor, you must first establish your expertise first, your foundation first. You have to be good at what you do and then use the humor, because if you do it backwards, if you try to use humor and you're not good at what you do, it works against you. And so I think that confidence comes through in your expertise, in your excellence of what you're doing in your work or your life, and then the humor becomes the icing that takes you to a level that you can do some of that self-deprecating, because the expertise is coming through otherwise.
Excellent. Now, Ron, you are also a speech writer, so you indeed help people to write their speeches. You write their speeches, or you add humor to speeches and presentations to really spice them up for people who are not great at this. So
right.
I want you to tell our listeners, how do they get a hold of you if they'd like to have some humor injected into their presentations?
Right. Well, I own a business with David Glickman, who's a former comic, and he's also a speaker. It's called Funnier Speeches. So the website is funnierspeeches.com. And basically, we take a person's speech, a transcript of their speech, or we'll take a video and turn it into a transcript, or audio and turn it into a transcript, and then we add humor to it. And so our goal is to give people lots of options of humorous lines that they can then pick and choose from as to what works best for them.
Excellent. So somebody could send you a business presentation, perhaps it's a sales presentation or whatever type of presentation or speech, and you would then find ways to really spice this thing up so that they can get laughs and connect appropriately after the laugh with the audience. Is that right?
Right. What we try to do is we really work hard at getting in and hearing the voice of the person, getting in their head and thinking about how they do things, and then writing humor that would work for their voice. So it wouldn't be just sort of this, you know, stock stuff that everybody gets, but it's really designed specifically for their program and the way that they do it.
Very good. Very good. All right. So please contact Ron if he can help you with that. He's excellent at what he does, for sure, and that's why he's our guest today. I know his work very well. And if you forget that contact information, of course, you can reach him through me. Ron, we are just about out of time. So first of all, let me say thank you so very much for sharing all this wonderful wisdom with our group today. I appreciate it very much.
Well, my pleasure. I love this stuff, and I appreciate your inviting me to share it.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun and a lot of value as well. So, again, if you'd like more information about Ron Culberson, the presentations and speeches that he delivers, because he does great work as a keynote speaker, or if you'd like more information about his speech writing services to interject humor into your speeches and presentations, you can contact me. I'm David Greenberg, and toll-free in the United States, the number is 1-888-773-2512, or just visit davidgreenberg.com, and I will put you in touch with Ron. So thank you to our listeners for joining us. Thank you again, Ron. And at this time, I'll just say bye-bye to everyone and hope to listen for you on our next teleseminar. That concludes the program. Bye-bye.